and for radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Dice Before Dishonor. The palace. The palace in Opera. It wouldn't be hard to sort of tip the scale at this point, especially since he's making a power play.
While Solomon is explaining on this and very focused on Guild of Arth and whatnot, Fafal, after checking this last room, is going to... his hand is going to wander while his eyes are almost elsewhere and start rifling through Solomon's pockets looking for the papers that Lady Marilia was asking for.
Okay. So,
sleight of hand check coming out. 25.
25. Get into his satchel. The fingers that almost can see by touch alone. Wrong wax seal, wrong wax sail, wrong type of paper. Ah! Right parchment, right feel, right viscosity in the wax used, and paper grain. Good. Countered by, Sullivan gets a perception check to see if you actually do it, whether you're successful or not.
Ooh.
I rolled an 18. And even a plebe like him probably has at least plus one perception. Does he have a plus two to get to 20, which is the DC for it?
Well, no. So the DC 20 is my sleight of hand check.
Normally. But if a module overrides it, with it, which it does, it says you can grab this stuff with only a 15.
Well, no, I realize, but that's the DC. The opponent makes a perception check to detect the attempt opposed by the sleight of hand check result. So... 25
oh, right. Okay,
is the
sorry,
DC.
But generically the 20 is success or fail, and all I gotta do is beat your attempt roll. Okay.
Yeah.
So you, right, okay, sorry. 18 plus bonuses does not make 25. So a normal street rogue, most of these DCs hover around 15 to 20, he would notice, but the ever so light exploring fingers of Fafal are successful. And you snatch out, you believe, an envelope padded with a few sheets of a document. That reward, quick peek out of the corner of your eye, actually has the appropriate wax crest, has the appropriate markings on it.
Oh, wonderful. So as I confirm that,
smooth.
I will gracefully, yet sneakily, slide it from my left hand, behind my back to my right hand, up to my neck, and actually store it in my scarf.
Okay.
As you put it in his scarf.
I'll have another sleight of hand. As you palm it, as it's considered. Palm the parchment.
Yep.
Particularly.
Natural 20 for a 28. Suck it, Jeff.
No. I'm seeing if you're compatriots, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Perhaps Leon here. I think the natural 20 is good for you to, like, get your revenge on Leon and, like, you know, do a little shuffle, do a little wave in front of him and just, like, sneeze on him as you're putting it in your... something.
Oh, yes. Fafal, as he's sliding the envelope around, realizes not only is there a bit of sweat on his great friend Lord Gildevar's face, but also Solomon's and Leon's. And so he shall start dancing between all three of them. Slightly and lightly dabbing their faces, removing the sweat, making them look perfect. And as he does, he slides the envelope into his scarf and ends up behind Varth and pats him on the shoulder. We're all clear.
So you're dabbing their faces with the end of your scarf while simultaneously palming it, taking advantage of your natural 20?
Oh, yes. Fafal is all about being seen and doing... It's one of those... Sleight of hand isn't just, oh, being able to be quick with the hands. It is the art of deception, Jeff. Keeping everybody's eyes away from what you're doing.
I saw Will Smith in Focus. I know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not the only one that's all Focus.
Draw their focus elsewhere, and yeah. Okay. Success.
Woo.
And you guys have that choice later whether you want to, you know, expose your compatriot.
Was there not one more matter to discuss?
Yeah, so... Fafal, you know, whispers in my ear that he thinks that we have what we need, and I agree. You know, he said that if we accuse him of something. So that's kind of what Gildervar thinks that Fafal's talking about, because he never saw the sleight of hand. You know, is that good? And he'll nod and go, I believe you're right, Fafal. Okay. Now let's go see what news we can make of this.
Yeah, Fafal, you need to signal them that you're done or successful, because like I said, you're so good. These guys are waiting for you to make a move, or they're going to do something themselves. Hold him down, root through it. No, there's nothing here. And he's, what do we do with the body? Fafal's like...
Leon's face kind of... There was a grin from the conversation, but it's gone.
Well played, Leon. Is like...
Well, he's not hiding it in his liver. Yeah!
Sometimes you can be too successful if you guys don't...
I'll look towards Leon and be... Oh, no, don't worry. That matter has been settled. It's fine.
Bartholomew.
Yes?
Your compatriots have seemed to have abandoned the main courtroom. Likely Winston has gone off to the kitchen, and Leon and Lord Varth have just seemed to have sort of vanished from the main area.
Yeah, no. Is there anybody who seems to have any military credentials to them?
We did that bet. That was Inka.
Inka's the only one who has military credentials, and she's the guard in the room, and I already browbeat her.
Yep.
So I browbeat the only military credentials in the room.
Yep. I got a minor noble, a cleric that we ripped off, and head of the Secret Service left.
No. That's right. I feel I mean, successful.
You could go intimidate each other's individual or a guard that's standing in the room, but
just look around the room and wait till somebody gives you a sideways glance, and then go for them.
Yeah, and then just pounce, and then pounce. Yeah. All right. No, you know what? I want to take a little amalgam from both of Jay's and Matt's wisdom here. And I'm just kind of going to go out in the middle of the room, and I'm going to put out the vibe. It's the new Dunnel Dagon vibe. It's the don't fuck with this shit.
Okay.
That's a new brand.
The big dick in the room.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I didn't wear pants for a reason. Okay.
All right. Romeo comes away from an elderly cleric-looking gentleman wearing the robes of Arrowdin and approaches you in the middle of the room. He looks pissy. Blast that man. Demand that I return his artifacts? They're family heirlooms. How could he be upset about that?
Romeo.
Alcasti, he says, with a not offended, but like nudging you. You know, soon to be Lord Alcasti.
Indeed.
I thought that was a nudge, as in case you forgot.
I'm being nice. It is a big half-orc I'm talking to. You don't just walk up and swat him on the hip and going, "That's Lord Alcasti to you, bastard."
I was implying like you thought he forgot, but fair enough. Yeah.
No, he's like, we're not on a first name basis. We started off with like Romeo. So first he corrects him. My name is Romeo, and it's Alcasti. Nudge, wink. Lord Alcasti.
Any other way, he's 2.5 feet shorter.
Because, you know, Bartholomew's putting out the vibe, and even Alcasti's feeling it. Comes away bitching about, you know, the clergy. Soon after, Sir Varth and his compatriots rejoin the room. But before we get to that part, let us switch the scene to the kitchen.
Oh.
Sir Winston.
Delectable. He's just munching away on a big old hunk of meat on a, you know, like a drumstick of a turkey or something. Epically huge for him, but he's just mowing.
Okay. Oh. So you're mowing down on a turkey leg.
Yep.
You're approached by what appears to be one of the serving staff, a female halfling with straight parted brown hair and great big doe eyes, carrying a serving platter and a servant's uniform. She looks at you, taps you on the shoulder, and slowly cocks her head to one side and makes big eyes at you and says, in a big stage whisper,
"Not supposed to be into that yet."
Begging your pardon. He wipes his mouth on the sleeve of his crushed velvet purple doublet.
"You're a peculiar looking one, aren't you?"
She's looking you up and down, taking your outfit in for the first time.
"Hmm.
Winston. You may call me Winston." Bows, gives like a slight bow. "And you are?"
"Hmm. Plum pudding. Yes. That's what we'll call you. My little plum pudding,"
she says.
"Well, best not let anyone else catch you into this, my pudding,"
she says with a big smile. And behind her, servants are coming in and going, and she just kind of turns with her tray and gets back in line and heads out. Doesn't give a name, just in her own little world, warns you off the food, and goes back and, you know, back to serving the room.
Well, Winston kind of gives a little bit of a blush and, you know, like stands up, you know, like puffs himself up, grab my tray up with the pitcher, freshly refilled from the larder, and
looking down at your crushed velvet pimpy outfit, you rather do resemble a great big bright plum.
Or at the very least, pudding.
Puts the drumstick back down onto the tray, picks up the
dignity?
Yeah, the tray with the pitcher.
What's left
of it? And, like does that whole, like, you know, they put the arm behind their back and they like play with their feet together and, you know, like,
can you reach that far?
He's so bashful. Someone's made Sir Winston the brave and mighty bashful. Take note of this date on the calendar year.
Can Winston reach that far?
Take
behind
note
his
of
back. No.
Take note of that halfling. Study her. Commit her image to memory.
Okay.
And
angelic, athletic, great big hazel doughy eyes.
Oh yeah. You had me at the doughy eyes. Like doughy, D-O-U-G-H?
I had to get through everything else first. That would be disgusting.
That was literally the last thing he said.
Doughy.
What?
implying her eyes are like literal balls of dough.
No, doughy as in like a fawn.
Yeah, but not to Sir Winston.
Those long
eyelashes.
Those
are like honey glazed donuts, gallivanting upon a field of wildflowers.
As Walt Disney would say, obviously, Winston has been thoroughly Twitter-pated.
That's it.
And we'll just leave him alone in there with his turkey leg.
So yeah, I'll pick up the tray with the freshly filled pitcher, couple glasses, and make my way back out into the common area to see if I can find my friends and bring them their drinks.
Okay. So, coming back around, Winston, Almeo talking to Bartholomew in the middle, Fafal looking very proud of himself, Lord Gildervarth and Leon from the adjacent hallway, and sort of rejoining your comrades, Winston, you notice they've picked up an extra guy. Seems to stay very close to Gildervarth. His wild silvery white hair and greenish blue skin belaying his heritage as, well, his youth and the fact that he lacks a beard making up the 99%, but also his genie-kin heritage is apparent on his skin and face. However, he wears a brand new courtier's outfit and owns it. Dude's got style.
So he seems at place.
He seems out of place, but almost, like I said, the guy comes in, he seems very flamboyant, very foreign, but he owns it, you know, like he's got style. Doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. He's, you know, certainly not blending, but you know what I mean?
Okay. So I'll walk up to the... Where's the biggest cluster? I guess they're all kind of gathered at the middle there.
Your gang is, yes.
All right, so I'll walk up with the tray to... where am I? There I am. Yeah, so I'll walk up to them. Tray in hand.
Okay.
Friends! Okay. Friends! I've got refreshments. Care to partake?
Acasti instantly snatches a tray and continues to mumble, discouraged, into his cups.
What does he mumble?
He just seems perturbed about something. The rest of you all notice this now.
Never mind him. He's been speaking nonsense since he came here.
Not nonsense?
Of course nonsense, Acasti. You've been speaking but nothing of the negative since you've come and approached me.
I take your point. He said, still, I have every legal right to those artifacts. I don't see any kind of... cocks his finger, his thumb over his shoulder. Why Father Basari would have such issue with it?
Romeo, who owns them now?
Well, I suppose we do.
You do.
Well, surely you could see fit, once you've proven your claim, to donate them back to the good father.
Why would I? Oh, yes, I like that. That's good. The Acasti name becomes generous as well as righteous. Yeah, he's just kind of pondering and having his drink. Anyway, he gives you guys a sort of a nod and thanks for the tip, and it just kind of wanders off over to the next group of people because he's still in the middle of making his rounds, you know, making sure everyone knows him, why he's here, leaving the five of you now alone in the center of the room.
Winston, where were you?
As if you should ask that. And I fill up a glass and hand it over to Bartholomew.
I expected as much. What did they say back there, behind the doors?
You should have seen her, Bartholomew. An angel.
Really?
I've never seen one like her before. She's the one.
Just looks down at his outfit. Kind of, you know, does the whole, like, rub on the velvet on his chest.
Plum pudding.
I'm not going to pretend, Bartholomew, that I understand what that means.
Oh, sorry.
Then, Bartholomew, I'm going to ask you this one thing.
Snatch a cup up. As Winston comes up, well, I'm just glad you didn't lose yourself in the ladder, friend. Excuse me a moment, and I'll make my way off to Father Dominicus.
Fall will not be in Varth's shadow, he will be Varth's shadow.
Okay. Your shadow seems to be blue and smiling at me. I feel lighter.
As they leave off to go talk to the father, Leon picks up the pitcher that he's waiting for, and quick question, is Inca Heldotter like still looking at me?
She's tasked with keeping an eye on everyone, but you cannot help notice continued glances your way.
Okay, if I catch her looking again, I'll raise my glass in a salute, figuring I probably haven't greeted her yet, which is rude, because family...
No, you mentioned it that you actually kind of did, and then avoided her. So, just returning a salute would probably be enough. We already did, Inca, so yeah. I wasn't trying to, like, reel you back in.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to. I was just like...
So, Leon, raising your glass to Inca, she slowly and solemnly nods, seeming to appreciate your acknowledgement. Lord Varth.
As I move up to Father... Basri, is that how you say his name?
Yep, Basri.
As I move up to Father Basri, I'll kind of take a second glass from a stroller by and offer it up to him. I hope I haven't set you out too much, you know, impositioning you with our fallen comrade.
He looks you up and down, trying to gauge who you are. Oh, look, I'm rolling knowledge nobility. Ah, young Lord Voth, is it? He says, and station demands that you, he still outranks you, as it were, as far as society goes. If you are, it's polite to sort of, you know, like kiss the ring or give some kind of, you know.
Yeah, I'll absolutely pay him the respects, you know, as sitting his title and position.
All right. Now, we know that you follow Saren Rae and just sort of like some token niceties to Aridin because it's the Taldean faith. So I don't expose you to get all, you know, to one knee and kiss the ring or anything.
Yeah.
But he does sort of politely nod and, you know, appreciate that you're not so big of yourself that you don't, you know, acknowledge his position. He waves the drink away and he says, sit. I believe I have a matter to discuss with you.
Very well. And I'll, you know, set the cup down on the table and take a seat next to him.
First off, let me point out that I can't say that I'm totally out of my element here, but things being as they are, I'm a little bit sort of at cross paths with you. Father Vilkas tells me of the favor that we're doing for you and your fallen comrade. You've been very generous with the church of late. But now I find that a man of your stature is working for. He just kind of like his eyes go over to Romeo. Comes back to you. He says, is your family involved with this somehow?
Are you sure you, my relationships with Falcasti may soon be coming to an end. I haven't been in a pair long enough to realize that that may have been a mistake trying to tie myself to him.
Oh, I see.
I'm only trying to do that good which I can.
Well, that is good news. Now, you and your comrades, he waves at recognizing, point sort of like gesturing vaguely, not like pointing across the room going, Leon! You know, drawing his gaze. Why is he saluting at me? Just, you know, emphatically gesturing in the direction of your comrades. You and your comrades, the church is in your debt to you and your comrades for taking care of our, and he kind of leans in, our rat's problem. His nose crinkles up in disdain. Remarkably, almost resembling a rat that you once handcuffed to a ladder. But I also appreciate that you didn't spill any blood unnecessarily on holy ground, even if it is down in the catacombs. I believe word of your, shall we say, your mettle and your quality does not go unnoticed in your deeds, young Lord Varth. Still, if you find that you actually are indeed at odds with Alcasti, whenever he has planned is over, I would have really... the Church of Aridin would appreciate the return of the artifacts that we held in Steed for historical purposes, you understand.
If those objects and relics do indeed belong to him, perhaps there's a way to convince him that they may be safest, or that it may best serve his image to have you curate them. I would most certainly be honored to have that conversation with him if you'd want. Perhaps there's a way that both parties could come out looking a bit better.
But if you forgive me being direct, and he sort of just stands up and brushes off his robe, he says, as things stand between the sunrise and sunset, you and his lot are in possession of them. And by Taldor law, that is 9/10 of it, so to speak. And he just sort of heads off rudely.
All right.
You like him. He's direct.
He's a zero bullshit kind of guy.
No, that's up to you. If you want to be like, I like this guy, you know, or like, what a bastard, I hate this guy. Thought it'd be funny.
No, I appreciate that quality, that kind of no dancing around the subject, so to speak. Just direct.
Yep.
Don't have to try to figure out what he wants. He'll tell you.
That's correct.
Yeah, so it seems at some point in time I may need to go talk to Alcasti. So I'll watch the father up and leave. I'll finish my cup, set it down next to the one that was, you know, a bit fuller, and start on it, and then take measure of the room.
Dominicus Rell stands and gets the attention of the room. Now, if anyone has seen Al Pacino playing The Merchant of Venice, that's the best way I can describe what this guy looks like and acts. Some finger gun, forward motioning, wrists, hand gestures, sort of a, always has peanut butter under the roof of his mouth when he talks. And he says, now if I can have your attention, now holding court for the Grand House of Stavian, Princess Eutropia Stavian, eldest daughter of Grand Prince Stavian III, his only living child. Her mother, Ephraim. Okay, I'm not reading the entire story, sorry. I'm getting there to start reading the backstory. And eldest daughter of Grand Prince Stavian III. I didn't say it was played by Pacino, and I didn't say it did a good Pacino. I'm just saying the dude looks like him and moves like him.
Mannerisms.
Entering the room, a woman, tall, brown hair, looking much like she stepped out of Breakfast from Tiffany's in her mid to late 20s. wearing a black and red long formal dress, comes and does the appropriate nods to appropriate important people that she spots in the room on her way to the crown of the room where Dominicus Rell sits next to the throne, taking the appropriate seat on the high ground, as it were, the back of the palace. She sits. Everyone bows. Dominicus Rell turns to her, leans in, and begins immediately discussing something. Lining up in sort of a waiting pattern, nobles, the merchants, and those well-to-dos sort of form a line either side on both sides of the room, but they still mix, mingle, lean, and whispers about.
After she's made her way kind of to where she's going to sit, is there any chance that I can get up there and, you know...
Yes, in these last few moments while she's speaking with her, who seems to be in advisory position, Dominicus, and people are, you know, whispers and rumors about. She has caused quite a bit of political turmoil of late. The rumors that are bound that you guys hear whispering are pros and cons towards her pushing the Senate to overthrow the primogeniture laws about how a male heir can assume the throne and not a female heir. Her being a woman in high standing would sort of endlessly live out her days as a princess or be politically married away. Or even if she took a husband, that guy might actually become king through default, depending on the shenanigans of the bureaucrats, the Senate, and the Tal'Dorei and the Tal'Dorei nobility. So obviously trying to take her destiny and the country in her own hands and reign the country towards a bright new future is her sort of campaign standing. It's funny that to have royalty act like politicians, but in this day and age, if she's the next best thing, you could bet that there is a whole bunch of, shall we say, garnering support for months on end between individual senators, noblemen, the bearded. Because if you win over the people and there's no power to back you up, then you've got nothing. Seeing your opportunity, Lord Varth, you approach the throne, take your appropriate bows as the, you know, Alfengard close to intercede. Eutropia stops them. Sorry. She looks you over and she's happy to see you. She says, "Ah, Lord Varth, a pleasure to see you."
So, you know, as she sits there and, you know, she addresses me, I'll say, "Your Highness, I'm glad to be in attendance today. I hope all of your plans are going accordingly."
She smiles at you and just kind of gives a silent, a curt nod.
She's not speaking openly. Yeah, I'll make a sense motive to see if she's kind of saying anything on the side there. Spins a chamber, puts a gun to his head. 24.
The matter of what she's stirring up in the Senate has divided the nobility and the senatorial vote. So half of this room probably doesn't like what she's doing. She's the boss and she's holding court today, so they come and, you know, they'll bitch and fawn and lip service to her because the Grand Prince isn't here today. But a large part of the room probably does not support her. And you get the sense that her motives of remaining silent or not talking openly is that most likely the man standing right beside her is not, you know, an avid supporter. Now she does nod and say, you know, nod curtly like, "Yep, things are going fine," but she's not about to elaborate.
Not about to reveal too much of her hand. Okay.
Not to talk openly as if Dominicus is an actual supporter himself. Oh, we can all talk about it, you know.
And I'll just, you know, make it fairly plain, you know, that if there's anything I can ever do, consider myself at your disposal. Family first.
Okay. Thank you.
And then if I have any way that I can kind of whisper anything into her ear, I will warn her that... whether or not...
Okay, so what you need to do is, after your little speech there, ask if you can approach.
Okay.
You just confirm that you're a supporter, then ask if you can approach Her Highness, you know.
And I'll kind of point, you know, off to her side. "May I approach?"
She cocks her head curiously at you, and then a moment gives you a slight nod.
All right, I'll move up to, you know, kind of beside her and lean.
Okay. She makes a show of it. She actually stands and holds out two hands to clasp yours in friendship. Now that you've said you seem to support her, if there's anything you can do, it looks like she's capitalizing on that right now.
Yeah.
And sort of loudly proclaims you, you know, "Distant third cousin's roommate's former aunt, so good to see you again," you know, that type of thing. And it sort of projects to the old room that, you know, the Varth family is in her corner. It's like, wow, she cashed in that chip really quick. But but you literally have her at arm's length.
And, you know, once again, I'll lean in and, you know, pledge my support. If there's anything I can do, consider me at your disposal. I would say that not all in the room feel that way. Perhaps the Alcasti seeks only to serve himself.
She sort of rolls her eyes and says, "Indeed, it's the way of things lately."
Okay.
If your name and titles had been stripped from you, Lord Varth, in generations past, and you learned of the truth of it, would you not do everything in your power to reinstate? I understand you had a hand in this. I'm surprised that you...
Being new to Opera, I was a bit naive in the assistance I would lend to the nobles here. I only hope that my faith in Alcasti was not misplaced.
Indeed, she says, confused, but sensing that you can't sort of elaborate right here.
Okay, and then I'll just, you know, I've considered her warned, and then I'll move back.
Yep. Walk backwards, bowing. Kind of thing.
Yep, and then move back to flank okay. Alcasti if he's still standing right there.
Princess Retropia reseats herself and turns to Dominicus Rowland, signaling that court now shall begin. He stands, wrapping a massive staff on the stonework dais at his feet.
The court calls forth Romeo Alcasti in the claim of reinstatement of nobility. Come forth.
Romeo does, takes a knee, doffs his cap.
No doubt that the Alcasti name is mentioned in our history. However, when petitioning the court, you were garnered a task. This task was proof to travel the land and garner evidence, irrefutable evidence, that your ancestor, who, once serving in our military, had been elevated for her deeds to the noble class, and then, once bearded, that you claim was unrighteously stripped of all lands and title. Present now your testimony and your evidence.
Romeo stands, takes a few steps forward to the proverbial, you know, center of the ring, right in front of the dais, and bows with a large flourish.
Greetings, Highness. I trust I find you on this fine summer's eve in good health. I, myself, spirits have been lifted as of late. My endeavors have paid off. I have brought with me more than abundant proof in documentation, artifacts, and in testimony that the Alcasti name was once raised to noble status because of deeds of my great-great ancestor, General Heronia Alcasti herself.
He turns, and attendants who were safeguarding such things start bringing forth the box with documents that Scarizzo and Tapo found, the bust, and the other trinkets, the medals, the laurels, everything that you guys have scooped up over the last 24-odd episodes of this short prologue podcast series preceding War for the Crown. Wait for it. One by one, they are paraded before her. She takes them, looks them over. Dominicus seems very interested, leans in, starts verifying them, as well as some other attendants of court. 10-15 minute wait as things are presented to Her Highness and appraisals and schmoozles, you know, quickly and efficiently, but albeit, you know, we're all just, well, you're court, you wait. Finally, she waves all the evidence away and turns back to Alcasti, who, confident in his success, is now beaming, standing, and even has the audacity to stroke his beard, as you see in the photo. Only now waiting for the princess to request his personal testimony on the matter. However, after calling the court to session, our first customer of the day being Romeo Casti, she has a surprise in store all of a sudden. After allowing Romeo to make his flowery preamble and confirming with Romeo and the attendants that he retrieved most of the proof, she calls forth Lord Gilder Varth instead of Romeo.
Oh, snap.
Nani?
I step forward. Yes? How may be of service?
Lord Varth, I understand you and your compatriots had a key hand in retrieving these artifacts. The court would like to hear your version of the story, and perhaps all those in attendance who aided you in helping the Alcasti name be re-elevated.
Romeo looks nervous and shoots you a sidelong glance.
I'll
practically willing you to say, no, no, like,
don't do it, man.
Oh, snap.